She puts the sub and subliminal messages for any Choi.
And they're the Rihanna reaction meme of American poetry, Danette Smith.
And you're listening to Verses, the podcast where poets confront the ideas that move them.
Presented by the Poetry Foundation and Post Loudness. We're excited to be here in Oxford, Mississippi. We're doing kind of a special thing. We're getting the chance to interview some folks who are affiliated with the MFA program here at Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited to spend the next few episodes talking to some of the people that make this amazing program go.
Yeah, I will admit selfishly that I think there are some very cool things happening down here in Oxford.
Hell yeah.
I think the program has really transformed over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And every time, I've been to Oxford a handful of times over the last couple of years. And every time there's been something special that feels so unique and genuine and explosive that's happening here. And I'm excited to bring all these poets on our show.
Yeah. Plus, we've had some very good food.
Oh, God, the food.
Mm-hmm.
Girl.
Lots of butter in my system. I am happy about it.
Yes. And Mississippi is my ancestral home. So,
oh,
you know, I'm feeling,
right. That's right. You have family that lives close-ish to here?
Yeah. I have a couple aunts and uncles and cousins about an hour away from Oxford that I'm hoping don't find out I'm here before we go.
Okay,
I love them very much. Just don't have time to sit on those porches. Not this time. My grandparents grew up near here. Like, my mom spent her summers here. Like, I feel like Superman returning to Krypton.
Yes.
You know?
Does it feel like home here a little bit?
It feels like a second home. It's been making me think about who are the people that make us proud to be from the places that we are from. What some would call a hometown hero.
Ooh.
If you will.
A hometown hero,
A hometown
say.
Hero. Yeah, yeah, yeah. First of all, you grew up like a military brat, but like a grad school brat.
Yeah, grad school. Grad school brat. Yeah. Postdoc brat.
Where is your hometown? And just maybe one who makes you proud to be from there.
Mm, okay. So the condensed version, chronological order, it's Minneapolis, Madison, New Haven, Atlanta, Providence.
Where it's small tour. Yeah.
And I think I have the most hometown pride about Providence for a number of reasons. Underdog shit, place I've lived the longest. Mm-hmm. And Providence has a lot of love for Prince Royce.
Ooh.
Shout out, of course.
Who's Prince Royce?
Prince Royce, the Prince of Bachata.
Oh,
Prince
shit.
Royce, come on.
Okay.
Yes. But my personal hometown hero from Providence, for reasons that I think are obvious, is Grace Lee Boggs. Also is a fellow Providence to Detroit Asian American radical lady. Was born above her father's restaurant, did amazing shit.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. Shout out Grizzly Bugs.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? I mean, you have a very strong sense of hometown.
Yeah, I've been in a very long-term relationship with the Twin Cities of Minnesota.
Wow.
And
that's so inspiring.
It is, you know? I remember at one point when I was growing up, we were gonna move to Nebraska for a hot second.
Oh my God.
Oh girl.
Imagine the different ass bitch you'd be if you'd grown up partly in Nebraska.
Danez from Omaha just would not have been the complete move.
Wow. Monica West before Monica West is Monica West.
Oh, wow. Deep cut. Oh, Lord. Shout out to people who understand that reference. But the obvious hometown hero for us has always been Prince.
Sure.
And very much, I love that purple nigga.
Uh-huh.
Assless cheeks. What is sexuality? The hottest man in the world is a little queer presenting, 5'1", little light skinned nigga.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my true hometown hero is a woman by the name of Robin Robertson, who was our anchor for our local Fox News affiliate. And I don't know why, but
it's her over Prince.
Yo, but it is Robin Robertson on the news. I was wow, Minnesota is so black. We have a black news lady. And she used to be up there in her perms and in her power suits.
God.
And I used to watch her as a kid just be like, this bitch is everything. I just loved her so much. She is Black Minneapolis to me.
Uh-huh.
And it's not because she does anything particularly black on air, but it's just
But also Black Minneapolis, personality in public.
Yeah.
Which I feel is the genesis of you.
Yeah, So yeah, Robin Roberts, I think, was the first person I felt a little bit of pride
Amen.
For. Yeah, I also want to be a pretty Roberts. Lady in a power suit.
Yes.
No, I'll grow up and be her.
You're halfway there, girl.
And we're halfway towards our interview with our wonderful guest, Joshua Nguyen. He is a Kuniman Fellow, published all over the place, The Offing, Freezeway, But in Poetry, Gulf Coast, and is currently a MFA candidate here at the University of Mississippi.
Yes, and we are so excited to get into this conversation where we'll talk about his relationship to his hometown of Houston and what it's like to currently be here in Mississippi doing the thing, writing the poems.
And we even get to talk a little basketball, which leaves Franny in the dark when she talks about Harry Potter. daughter.
I am a student of whatever it was that happened when I was sitting here.
Amen.
I suppose.
Amen. Let's not waste any more time. Let's get into this thing with Josh, who's going to read a poem to us to kick things off.
This is a lukbat. It's called Cutting the Pork Shoulder. 6 to 8 pounds of pork could feed plenty of poor children in Vietnam, where one sins by leaving scraps on dishes. Bit by bit, I pick and pick at the lemon-lime dip while my cousin sits and sits, waiting like the dried water being left by the bia drink. He wants to tell me about how he wishes to grow up old in America. He holds my shoulder in the fold of his palm. Then the mopeds hiss outside. Brown faces kiss biceps that rarely result in accidents. Then the skinny men who drive sit-bos pretend the sun isn't out, end up with blisters from peddling boys with the same weight as me. And that's how you can tell who is rich here. The tall, the fair skin, four-wheel car driving child of sergeants. In Vietnam, the more fat inside you, the higher the chance you live in the palace. Oh, how decadent. The smell. Hours of overnight defrosting. Fat between the tender gaps. Chopped by a hand. Attacked by a hand. All good things die.
Josh Nguyen is a poet. And shooting guard living.
Shooting guard's a good possession.
Yeah. Shooting guard living here in Oxford, Mississippi. Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for being Mississippi.
Yeah.
It is our great pleasure to be in Mississippi, trust
yes.
me. So we're going to ask you a question we ask everybody. Mm-hmm. What's moving you?
My roommate, Julian Randall, got me into Steven Universe.
Amazing.
The show Steven Universe got me into it last year, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty much caught up to the first few episodes of the newest season. Mm-hmm. There's so many like narratives, and mm-hmm. one of them is like there's like this immigrant narrative, I think, from like Peridot, I think. There's all these like
Peridot as an immigrant. I never thought about it like
yeah.
that. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's like all these like layers of like home and like trying to find your place in this home and reclaiming a home that's not your home. Mm-hmm. Right. And I've been thinking about like those narratives on Steven Universe mm-hmm. and how like I relate to it a lot. And like how I've been like trying to connect that with like finding home in my own writing. Mm.
Who are you on Steven Universe?
Great question.
I want to be Lion.
Lion is the coolest character.
I want to be Lion.
What does that mean? As somebody who does not watch Steven Universe.
Lion is a pink lion.
Okay.
Who's
cool.
very attitude-y. Doesn't talk, but is very okay. attitude-y. Steven can also crawl into a mystical like dimension that is inside of this lion's yeah. head.
Uh-huh. You can store like a sword in Lion.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Every time somebody explains something about Steven Universe to me, I don't understand how
I know,
it's a
I know.
Show
it is. Sounds like everybody's just smoking very queer crack.
Right.
And it's kind of true. It's, it's kind of what the show is.
But yeah, I want to be Lion, but I'm pretty sure I'm Pearl.
Mm.
I think I have that type A personality, and that comes off in like how I care about the world and mm-hmm. how I care about people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure I'm Pearl. What about you?
I wasn't expected to be interviewed. I would like to think I'm Garnet. But I think I'm Amethyst.
Hmm.
Yeah. She wasn't formed right. She's like kind of rebellious, you know, doesn't really do rules so well. She's like really just winging it out here and like trying to dazzle with attitude, which is 90% of my career.
Trying to dazzle with attitude.
Trying to dazzle with attitude and personality.
Like, that's my power.
Yeah. My power is bullshit. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think Amethyst, I identify with her.
And Garnet is the one that's played by, what's her name?
Estelle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, every time someone says a thing about this show, it just sounds like you're making it up. It always just sounds like someone's just making shit up.
Honestly, I'm pretty sure Rebecca Sugar was like staring at a picture of like Ani DiFranco and like smoked on the in there.
Put like looking at her crystals?
Yeah, kind of.
With the ukulele.
It's just like what lesbian found like some stones and a ukulele and was like, I have a show. It's kind of what this show is.
You think Franny would be like Lapis or Connie?
I think Franny's also a little bit of a Pearl. And maybe some Lapis.
Thank Sounds you. Like an Aquarius, know, which is me.
But we are not a Steven Universe review podcast. We are,
yes.
We are indeed a poetry
30
podcast.
30 minutes has passed.
Amazing.
I could do this all day. Thank you for that beautiful poem you
yeah.
read, too.
Yeah,
that
appreciate
is,
it.
It's a lukbat, right?
Yeah, lukbat.
Can you tell us a little bit about that form for our listeners that might not be so familiar with it?
It's a traditional Vietnamese form used back in the day for like long poems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very complicated rhyme scheme. So basically, it repeats eight-syllable lines, mm-hmm. 6-8-6-6-6-8. But the sixth syllable of the six-syllable line has to rhyme with the sixth syllable of the next eight-syllable line. Mm-hmm. And then the eighth syllable of that eight-syllable line has to rhyme with the next six syllable and keeps going like that. It's
okay, yeah.
So like the, I don't have the poem anymore. But like, yeah, so like, say the last word of the six-syllable line is dog. It has to rhyme with internally with the next six syllable within that eight-syllable line.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So it's fog, but then the eighth syllable is spark, and then the next six-syllable ending is
bark.
There you go.
Hey, yeah, we're all together. That's how you do it.
Would you mind going back to the poem and just like reading a few lines so that we can hear what that sounds like?
Yeah, so 6 to 8 pounds of pork could feed plenty of poor children. In Vietnam, where one sins, children sins, where one sins by leaving scraps on dish is, right?
Okay.
It's like close rhyme.
Okay, yeah.
So that's...
Wow. That is so cool. How did you come to find that? I mean, well, you're Vietnamese.
Yeah, but who was it that led you to that form?
Mm-hmm. I had to take my comp exam in February, and you have to read a book of translation for it.
Oh, cool.
And I read The Tale of Q. It's like this old Vietnamese folktale. Oh. And it was all in Luc Bát.
Huh. Whoa.
And that's how I learned about what Luc Bát was and how there wasn't a lot of Luc Bát's like contemporary-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is fun. It's like a puzzle. It's like a game. As I see most forms, it's like a puzzle to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of ran with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's been cool because I'm not fluent that well in Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started writing the Luc Bát's, one, it formed like a bridge in two ways because I finally could talk to my dad about something that I do. Because like we usually eat in silence, but he like reads like a Vietnamese book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned that like most of his like warrior Vietnamese books are in Luc Bát form.
Oh, wow.
And he grew up like learning Luc Bát as like the main form in like high school, like middle school in Vietnam. So it literally formed like a bridge between me and my dad that we've never really had before.
Wow,
that we could talk about like poetry.
Wow. So you just discovered your dad has been reading poetry this whole time.
And the second way it's like this form is bridging something for me is that like I'm finding home in my writing, which is like nice because like I'm not confident writing Vietnamese in my writing too much. But like by using this form, I feel like I'm like connecting with like my culture, like my ancestors. I feel like I'm contributing back to like the Vietnamese American literature landscape, I think, which feels like invigorating.
And
I think it's just been a cool way of like connecting back to Vietnamese literature that I've never really like got to study ever.
Yeah. Do you know of other Luc Bát's that have been written in English or like
really? I've tried researching it and like all the ones I've seen are like they did it as an example, but they weren't meant to be like poems.
That's so beautiful to be able to find.
Thank you for ushering it in.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, write more Luc Bát's, people.
yeah. PSA.
Yeah, and like it literally forces me to like slow down because you have to worry about like the internal rhyme scheme.
Yeah.
I'm learning more about constraints in my work because of it.
Mm-hmm.
I really have to like slow down and like make sure each word counts and each line is like it can still like flow but still hold whatever tension I need it to do in the form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you write in other form, like other traditional forms?
Actually, Amy Nizukumatado has been like telling me to do like broken forms.
Take
a form, like a traditional form, like break it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So like a lot of my Luc Bát's now are like broken Luc Bát's.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I recently did like a double hai bun.
Can you explain what a hai bun is for folks who might not know?
It's like a block of prose and then a haiku.
She writes a lot of them, right?
Yeah. It's been helpful for me because it makes me like be more concise in my writing. And then like it's a puzzle and I have to solve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you into games? Are you like a game person?
Yeah. I think you're on the phone, but we were talking about the newest game that I've been into is Monopoly Deal.
You know who's really into that game is Aaron Samuels.
Really?
Yeah, his whole family just like plays it religiously.
Okay, and it's like Monopoly and Uno had a baby, right? That's what...
It's a card-based version of Monopoly, and the box says you can finish that game like 15 minutes, but still cutthroat.
Oh.
Because like faster, so you steal more often, you know?
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Because Monopoly sucks because of how long it takes.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever finished a game on Monopoly.
I hate playing Monopoly. It makes me so distraught the crushing loss. Well, I've never won at Monopoly.
Well, now you can have crushing loss in 15 minutes or less.
And keep doing it. Just keep
That's great. That's fine. It's the investment in it of time and also like fake money than the crushing loss.
Yeah, so if you want to break some friendships by a Monopoly deal.
Okay.
Josh, if you can, I want to circle back to the loop bot a little bit. I'm wondering, these formal constraints, has it switched your eyes to what you're even looking at as far as content?
I think for the Lookbot especially, since it's so constrained, I see Lookbot for me right now as like a way to almost like Asana, how like Asana is like a good thing for like any detached like single thought sometimes. Mm-hmm. I see the Lookbot as like a similar thing. Mm. It's good if you have like any like quiet tension. Mm. I think a lot of my work right now has like a quiet tension in it. Like with the Lookbot specifically, I write a lot about like Vietnamese like food and like the process of it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like poems are like that talk about the joy of food, like eating a mango versus like what happens when like your dog is choking on a mango or something like that. That's a real example.
Your dog almost choked on a mango?
On a mango seed and caught it from its jaw. Whoa. It was a very scary event.
Whoa.
Yeah. And like, so like, I'm writing a lot about like the work of food more versus like the joy of it. Mm-hmm. If you're writing like something that's food related, you tend to go towards like a recipe type of form. Mm-hmm. So the Lookbot, since it has the rhyme scheme, it's very musical still and has like that simple, almost like sing-songy nature of it. Mm-hmm. But then because it's so constrained, it can hold a lot of like that quiet tension that I'm looking for in my work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Let's talk about food.
Yes.
What is your relationship with food right now? How is it treating you? How are you feeling?
Yeah. Is there good Vietnamese food here?
No.
That is so sad.
I learned a lot of recipes my mom taught me. Uh-huh. And then I kind of cook it here. And it helps me like stay grounded and stay, like feel like at home in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I also work part-time in the kitchen at the Oxford canteen. I've learned like the practices of like how harsh it is to work in like a restaurant kitchen and like the oil burns you get and like cleaning the stovetop and like being yelled at all the time the heat on your face.
Are you like on the line?
I'm the line. I'm also like just the grill dude, like on the stovetop itself. Got you. But at the restaurant school, I think I can put input in the specials a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's been cool to like learn the practices of how to cook.
Has working with food changed your relationship to food elsewhere in your life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One, I appreciate it way more. Mm-hmm. Any food, just like the preparation of it. I appreciate my mom a lot more because she would cook like way in the morning so that I have lunch. Mm-hmm. And then she would cook right when she got home from work. And like me cooking all day and coming home to cook for myself. It's just like so much time and so much energy.
Yeah.
And also like working in the kitchen, you have to like have a good clear head or else like the pressure of the and the heat will just like get to you. Mm. Especially like if you work on a brunch in Oxford, Mississippi, they brunch here.
They brunch hard. Okay.
So like Sunday, you'll just see like a line of like usually like white women just like ready to eat their avocado toast. And I'm just like, oh God, if I hope the eggs don't stick because it just ruined the whole timing of everything. Uh-huh. I appreciate the process of making food a lot more. And I also like, I'm just thinking about like the pain that goes into it.
For some reason in my mind, I feel like that seems to connect to the things that you talked about when it comes to form in poetry, you know, like the like really digging into the process of the thing and having to like look at the materials in front of you more closely and stuff. Those things don't feel like completely unrelated to me.
No, I think Kevin Young said something in some book somewhere where he was like, it was in the book for sure, but
definitely a book.
Look, I'm not even mad, I'm just laughing because it's true, because Kevin Young has like 19 so it's just like one of them shits.
It's true.
It was like he said that like the art of like poetry is similar to the art of like cooking, and they both ground themselves in like tradition and both ground themselves in like a familial aspect too. Mm-hmm. And like you can use both for like exploring pain or history or joy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, even when you were talking about like the story with your dad, it was like over a meal, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
So now you and your dad just talk about Lookbot.
Just for hours and hours on end.
That's six word, right?
Nice. That six word worked. No, but I think it's just cool that I can reference his book and like look at like the Vietnamese like line and see. I can count the syllables.
Do you talk to your parents about literature and poetry in general?
They're kind of indifferent towards my career life choice.
Yeah.
My mom just wants me to have health insurance eventually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's like her main goal.
Do you have health insurance now? You got health insurance?
Yeah,
now,
health
right?
insurance.
Like a grad school health insurance.
Yeah, yeah, grad school health insurance is clutch. It's yeah. so good.
So they don't really talk about literature with me a lot. Mm. They just focus on like my next step if mm-hmm. I'm going to survive mm-hmm. and if I'm going to eat well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The last time we talked about like literature was really like the night I told my parents that like, I was going to come to the MFA program here. Mm-hmm. And because originally for a long time, I was going to be a dentist. Mm. And mm. then poetry was always something I did since I was a kid, like on the side.
In college, you thought you were going to be a dentist?
Mm-hmm. I was on track. Wow. I did like the DAT. Wow. I got a dental school interview in like New York.
Whoa.
Yeah. But when I got that first interview, I was like, this doesn't feel right. I was listening to Mitski a lot at the time. Mm.
Shout out Mitski.
Shout out to Mitski.
Mitski yeah. will pivot your life choices.
Thank you, Mitski, for pivoting my life choice.
Yeah, I broke up with everyone with that last time. Just everyone. Like, I had people I wasn't even dating. I just called random men and was just like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, I'm the cowboy now. But yeah, no, she had this song, Dreaming Costs Money, My Dear. Mm. And it's about like following your dream, even though it might like hurt your parents. Mm. It's a very like sad, but like moving song to like follow your dream, even though it's going to hurt. So that happened. And then I went to a Waffle House with my best friend. Mm-hmm. I love Waffle House.
What's your Waffle House order?
Yeah.
I get 2 over hard eggs.
Okay.
Over hard?
Over hard. I don't like runny yolk.
Okay.
And then chunked and smothered hash browns.
Chunked and smothered.
Yeah. Wait, okay. So what's chunked again?
Chunked is
the Canadian ham.
Yep.
Oh, and smothered is onions. Cheese? Oh.
Onion cheese.
It's been too long.
And then a waffle.
Okay.
And a waffle.
Tight. Okay, cool. Yeah. Back to your stuff.
And then I asked them, like, what do you regret in life? And he said, lying to yourself. Oh. And that was like the exclamation point of like, I'm going to follow my dream now and pursue my writing career.
Yeah. Mitski and Waffle House.
Mitski and Waffle House.
Making the
Waffle
House come best true. Friend.
Yeah. So then I had to muster up the courage to like tell my parents that I was going to leave dental school and do this writing thing. I had this whole like speech prepared. I wrote like a check for all like the dental school supplies that my dad helped me buy.
Wow.
It was like a quiet dinner. The TV wasn't on. I went downstairs. I was like, mom, dad, sister, I have to talk to you about something. And then they thought like I got someone pregnant. And they thought like I committed like they thought like I got into like trouble with like the law at first. But then I was like, yeah, I'm going to follow my dream. Here's my plan. And then here's a check.
Damn.
And then my dad was just like, you know, I'm glad you figured this out now before it's too late.
Yeah.
And my mom like started tearing up a bit. And then she was just like, I just want you to have health insurance. And I'm afraid that no one's going to love you because you're going to be poor and a writer.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Opposite mom. Actually, yeah. Everybody wants you because you're poor and a writer.
Well, at least because you're a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The poor part.
That's rough.
Amen for parental support, even if they don't quite. You know, they have their own worries at first. It took my family a while to like be convinced of the writerly path, you know? My grandma still thinks I'm unemployed to this day, which I have to constantly remind her is true.
Technically
kind of true. But what Avon, what a blessing that, like, yeah. Especially your father just being like, I'm glad you figured this out now, which in the check probably didn't hurt either.
Yeah.
And he's been back to eating and reading his Luke bot.
I fucks with dad. I fucks with dad in every story.
Wow. And how are they now? With all of it?
My dad, pretty quiet, doesn't really talk to me about school much, just that if I'm paying my bills, if I'm still working. And then my mom, just like, yeah, if I'm healthy, if I'm eating well, if I'm gonna get a job after this.
Yeah.
They don't even ask about my writing too much.
Okay. Right.
Have they ever read your writing? Or have they ever seen you perform?
They seen me perform and it was a bad performance. So I regret them coming to that performance.
Oh, no.
It was very angsty.
Was this like Brave New Voices era?
Brave New Voices era. Uh-huh. Last time they heard me perform.
Wow.
I was like 15.
Wow.
With bangs.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
Wow. a straight angle bang or a slant?
Like a swoopy bang? Like an emo bang?
I had like the Justin Bieber cut before Justin Bieber had that.
Okay.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah. Biden ass Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber before Justin Bieber was Justin Bieber.
But I'm interested to see because they said they would come up to my third year graduation and then we have a reading. So it'd be cool to see what they think about my newer stuff.
Let's talk about the newer stuff. I would love to talk about your manuscript a little bit. So your manuscript focuses around Hurricane Harvey. Am I correct? Yeah. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that and how you're approaching the hurricane in your work?
Yeah, it's called Net Stayed Wet. It's about like the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey in Houston. And it's through the lens of like a Vietnamese American viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And like also from like a family who loves the Houston Rockets. Because most of like natural disaster poetry books, they like personify the natural disaster, right? And I wanted to focus on not personifying the hurricane, really, and just focus on the city like rebuilding and like what it means for the city to be resilient. I never personify the hurricane.
Why did you want to make that move?
I don't know. I think I had this idea of like not giving it any agency in my own book and like how that would look. Just focus on like the people in the city.
Yeah.
And like the response from the city itself. I personify the city a lot, but not the hurricane.
I wonder what that comes from, the impulse to personify like the natural disaster.
I was actually in like one of my pre-1800 classes I'm in. And we talked about how like the impulse to personify is just like a need to learn something about something you don't understand. And like back in the day, since they were still learning a lot about like nature and stuff, they personified just to like make sense, to maybe learn something from what they don't know. So I think maybe the impulse to personify is just why, trying to give reason to something.
Can I ask why personify the city then in that case? Or how does that feel different than the impulse that people feel to personify the storm?
I think I wanted to personify the city itself because I wanted to like create kind of like a hometown hero vibe. There's this basketball player who I love, Gerald Green. He's from Houston. He traveled around like 9 different NBA teams. And then he got signed with the Houston Rockets last year and like thrived. He's thriving on the Houston Rockets in his hometown. And I think I wanted to like play on this idea of like what being a hometown hero is, like putting a city on your back. And also wanted to like put a spotlight on Houston and like create like a language around my hometown. So I think personifying Houston was a way to like create this language of like home.
Also, I mean, I guess, you know, unless you're a certain background, if you hear Houston and like the people of Houston, you might not think like, oh yeah, big Vietnamese American city, you know?
It's like the second spoken language in Houston, Vietnamese.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Well, I think Houston, I think Black people and Vietnamese folks, mainly because of the Knoll sisters. but also food, as we were talking about earlier, you know, like Vietnamese folks have had a huge influence on how food is eaten. And like, especially like, you know, you talk about like Viet, Cajun.
Crawfish.
Like, like crawfish and stuff like that. Like super amazing mashups of culture. Oh my God, that crawfish is so goddamn good.
Can I say that once you have Viet, Cajun crawfish, any other crawfish like from Mississippi is not comparable.
You better shut your mouth.
I feel like
somebody gonna come find you.
I feel like
I get to go back up north. They gonna find they gonna find me. They get you stay down here.
And you say crawfish, not crayfish.
Who says crayfish?
No,
don't people say crayfish?
People say crayfish. They say crawdaddy here.
They're like crawdaddy. Yeah,
I feel like crayfish is like when you're in science class, but when it's time for the eating is crawfish. You know what I'm saying? Like,
crawdad. What about mud bugs?
I like a mud bug.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't want to eat something that's called a mud bug.
I do.
I have another hot take.
Eat shrimp. Those are like just like water roaches, you know?
Yeah, but they're not called water roaches.
But you know what? I would order a coconut water roach right now if they had it cheap.
You know another hot take I have on crawfish?
What's up?
I love Viet Cajun crawfish. I think it's overrated. The work of getting the meat and like getting the juice in your eye, it's like a lot of work to get like a payoff.
What about like crab or lobster? Because lobster, I feel like it's more work, but more meat.
Yeah. It's a better ratio.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel you that it's a lot of work, but I'm also I'm just thinking about like the work that goes into like poor people food, which we have like made delicious and like iconic in a more modern age. Like, you know, when I think about like crawfish, I think about like oxtail, which is like a whole bunch. You put a whole bunch of work to make a good oxtail. It's not that much meat.
No.
But we have now raised it to the specter of delicacy, right? Where it's being served in those restaurants. And so I think the same thing with crayfish look at me guy saying crayfish. With crawfish now that it's a poor people food, right? It's mud bugs. You know, it's like boil a whole bunch of these shits up and serve them. We ain't got time for this. We broke. We gotta go back to work. So I agree with you. I think like all kind of poor food that we sort of look at in a new regard these days has been hyped up to a certain regard.
but them shits is delicious. Yeah. And I just gotta disagree with you.
It's like the beauty of the work.
Yeah, the beauty of the work. You know, like somebody seasoned that water, you know, somebody seasoned that boil to like go in there. Somebody watched that. You know, them fishes is recently dead for you.
Right.
You
and then there's like the family aspect of like putting the newspaper out on the table and like getting the beer and like having like a backyard boil where like your family has like a bunch of crawfish like just alive in a big like cooler.
And not being scared of mess in a particular kind of way, you know, you just got to dive into
the family aspect is awesome with the crawfish.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, where do we go?
let's keep talking about the book and the manuscript and stuff. Yeah, what are things, what are questions that you have in the manuscript right now?
I think there's a idea of, I guess, translation. Being in the MFA program, I've been reading a lot like, particularly, like, when I remember being, like, white writers from, like, Quote Canyon, always have to, like, Google Greek mythology, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I find myself always Googling. I'm like, okay, well, if I have to Google this Greek god every other page, then, like, if I put, like, one Vietnamese reference, then you should be able to Google that, too. Mm-hmm. But I'm also, like, wrestling with this idea that, like, I grew up the son of immigrants, I'm not that fluent in Vietnamese. So like, there's like that barrier already. Mm-hmm. So should I have empathy with like other folks like me who are reading this who can't really speak the language and like they feel like disconnected from their own culture? Right. So should I have like more empathy towards those folks as well? So I've been like tackling that issue, what to translate, what not to. And I actually include like a glossary in my book of like the Houston like terms and like the basketball terminology. I've been trying to tackle this idea of like what to translate, what to like explain, what not to.
I mean, I remember in my first book I like put things in my notes in the back that I would absolutely not put anymore. I think I like put a note for kimchi, but that was also like, it was 2014, it was like in the time between then and now, like kimchi's like become more like trendy and known. For me it was like a sort of anxiety about like not being understood. I don't know if you relate to that, of continued to like be made like foreign and not understood.
And then Viet Tan Vinh just had that post about like people know what you're talking about no matter what. I took that to heart. But I do think that the tackling comes from like this idea of I don't understand everything in my own culture. Should I help those who feel the same way? Or like shine that?
Because I think then it becomes a question of like, who are you doing that translation and documenting for?
Right.
What I have kind of come to is like, who is my most perfect audience? You know, in my like dream world, whose hands is this book in and what assistance do they need, if any? And if they need some help kind of being ushered into the work, then sure. But if it's for a general audience, that they don't exist and screw them.
But also, like, maybe the process of Googling for, like, a young Vietnamese-American reader would also then lead them to finding some other information, you know?
Like loot spot.
You know? Yeah.
Like, Googling, or just, like, going to, like, parents straight up.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, like, what is this?
What is this?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be that a makes me feel move better, to, like, push them back out into the world.
To build more bridges within themselves in their own culture.
That
makes me feel
better. Yeah. I don't know. But also, I sometimes I love a glossary.
You know, as a young Vietnamese man, I want to search and make my own glossary. I just feel like we should make them work as hard to understand our work as we have for our own. But I do hear you of like, you know, what happens for like the young Josh out there, right? Who's like also coming to this work and searching for it. Oh, Lord, I have a question. in like sort of writing this collection that revolves around this fictional family?
Semi-fictional.
Semi-fictional.
Semi-fictional. Yeah. What is that semi-fictional family teaching you about your own family and your own journey?
Oh, I think writing this semi-fictional family has helped me learn about the obsessions of my own family. What obsessions we hold on to in order to like cope, or in order to like find a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think for this family in this story, it's like the Houston Rockets, that fandom, like holding on to a team that like doesn't know you. When people like love a team, they're not gonna like go to your birthday party or anything.
Say like, shout out to the Wim family for supporting us.
But, like, I think there's this idea of like holding on to them as like a beacon for the city. And you want them to do well because that's like your connection to the city. And it's a way of like grounding yourself in a place you're trying to love or like adapt to. I know there's like ways of like fandom can go bad, but I think in a lot of ways it can also do a lot of good and like trying to make you feel like at home.
It seems like also like a endeavor of hope,
yeah.
You know? Do you see yourself back in Texas after this?
Ideally, I would love to be back in Texas. Okay. I love Houston, like to death. I think Houston's one of the best cities in the world.
Hmm.
You have a car, you're good. Once you have a car, you can explore all of it, which I think is exciting. There's always new pockets opening up. Mm-hmm. And there's like a thriving arts scene in Houston and a huge food scene. Like the third largest like Asia town.
Hmm. Really?
So much bubble tea. And Dallas, Carrollton is like the Korea town.
Uh-huh.
I think it was like the first Daiso in Texas. But now Houston has a Daiso. So
wow. I don't know any city has a Daiso.
It's a Daiso.
It's like a Korean chain store that's like a...
Value store. It's like a dollar...
Yeah. It was like a Target.
Ooh, but okay, I'm in.
Much smaller.
Okay.
Bright heavenly
cheaper.
Lights.
Yeah.
It's super bright inside.
Cheaper,
very like
brighter Target.
Organized.
Yeah, everything's super organized. Yeah. It's
I'm in.
You get a lot of shrimp chips there.
Yeah. Taiso means like it's got everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's enough.
Got everything, yeah.
I like this.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. Yeah, if you're like, oh shit, I need like lipstick and a charger and a
elephant bookend.
Yeah, an elephant bookend and like a cast iron pot. Go to Daiso. The Daiso.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Outside of the content of the work, how do you see Houston showing up in the craft of your book?
Houston is humid.
Hmm.
Oh. Right? You got humid poems?
I have poems that feel sticky.
Huh.
Ooh.
What does that mean? Sticky. We both just like leaned in.
Talk to me some more about these sticky poems.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of poems of water, obviously, in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Houston's a very like slowed down city, right? And I think there's a lot of meditation in the poems themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it goes back to that quiet tension I love. There's always like an underlying like tension coming from what the poem is talking about. Mm. And that adds like momentum.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
The poems like force you to slow down as if like you're like in a humid, sticky summer in Houston.
Mm. Mm.
But I kind of love it. I think the work makes you appreciate that a lot more. Like the slowing down, the being stuck in the line more.
Yeah. And there seems to be like, I mean, yeah, like you say, the quiet tension. I also think of it as like a little underlying danger in the poems.
Like an ominous like presence.
Yeah, which makes sense, I think, both for the idea of natural disaster, but also that like kind of like underlying desire also has to do with like being an immigrant in Texas, you know?
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
Yeah. And there's always like, you know, the idea of like what's not being said in an Asian American household.
Right.
And also, like, there's, like, probably, like, a Houston illusion every other line, honestly.
We need to get this book into Solange's hands.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Solange, Beyonce, Travis Scott. The whole Houston Rockets team gets a copy.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Oh, that's one of my next questions. When are the Rockets going to win a championship?
I feel like we're getting back to our team of, like, last year's caliber this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did the whole thing of, like, so, you know, like, Pop always rests the Spurs. For the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they rested everyone but
Greg Popovich is the coach to this. Okay, never mind. We'll just go talk basketball.
This is the one where the orange ball goes into the hoop thing.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
This is why I have a basketball glossary at the end of my book. But yeah, I think they rested everyone but James Harden, and now everyone's coming back. And now the Rockets are back to who they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like climbing the rankings right now. I think they might get the number two spot.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is our year again.
Is your year?
Because last year, Chris Paul goes down, and we were up 3-2 in the playoffs, and we lost. So I think if everyone's healthy, it's our year.
Okay.
All right.
And then there'll be a sequel to the book.
That's just called We Won.
We won. We fought a hurricane, and we beat that nigga ass. Fuck you, Harvey. Got it. I love this. Word.
Are you a Timberwolves?
It's hard out here being a Timberwolves fan. Mm-hmm. And so I come in and out of them. I have a healthy respect and love and admiration, but I put my faith in other teams.
Mm-hmm. Like who?
I've been a Celtics fan for a little bit. I kind of follow LeBron wherever he goes just because I like him. I like the Thunder and then my Wolves and the Bulls. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Those are my teams.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your team?
My team?
Franny's team, vulnerability and empathy.
Rigorous spirit of play
yeah.
and experimentation. Love that sport.
Yeah.
Fine at that one. Well, there was a brief moment after the... Okay, this is a completely different sport, though. I don't know. I thought at some point I would become a mild soccer fan, and then I just never took any action steps towards the goal.
I told myself one year I was going to get into hockey. I bought the jersey, and that was about it. Yeah. I thought the clothing would activate it.
Well, I love like watching sports.
Yeah, superhero cape.
I really enjoy watching like any sport. Mm-hmm. Truly, but yeah. It's so much effort to follow things. I don't know.
And then get heartbroken.
Yeah. I don't need more heartbreak. I don't know. Yeah. I was wondering if it'd be fun to come up with like an all-star poet basketball team.
Poets who actually do like
basketball?
Like
if you were going to like put together a basketball team made entirely of contemporary poets.
Like, question. Yeah. Are we like relying on their actual hoop skills?
Or just like
Lucille Clifton is so amazing.
Yeah.
She like shares so much of herself. So she'd be a
No. Actual basketball skills.
Oh, okay. Terrence Hayes.
Doesn't Kaveh?
Kaveh's like tall, but I'm not necessarily sure about coordinating.
Does he play basketball?
He plays with like Jose Olivares and like Nate Marshall.
Would you put Nate on this?
I would put none of them on this team. That's the thing. I know they all play basketball. Love all of you guys, but like they play basketball and I do not want any of them repping on the poetry team. Because I think they all love basketball a lot and they all are poets.
Now. So you think you're pretty good?
I suck. Call me when it's the football team, but not basketball.
Hmm.
Did Ross Gay go to school on a basketball scholarship?
No, Ross, I put Ross Gay on the team.
Yeah.
Didn't he play football?
Ross Gay loves basketball.
Oh, really?
I thought it was basketball.
Hmm.
It was a sport. I don't know. That nigga could have played softball.
Natalie?
Natalie Diaz.
Natalie, definitely.
Julian was on a basketball team.
But like Natalie Diaz like played professionally. Mm-hmm. So like, that's like, let's put Julian there. Okay. Yeah. He's got a lot of basketball palms. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you?
Me?
Don't you want to be on the team?
I want to be on the team.
You can be on the team.
I want to be the sixth man of the year.
Okay, you can be the sixth man. All right, let's put Rita Dove for the I don't know. I don't know if she can hoop, but like she probably can. She probably got Mean Jay.
Every episode, we play this game that we like to call This Versus That, where we pit two things together.
Okay.
And you have to tell us what will win in a fight. For this episode, we are going to ask you to choose between, in this corner, the Lookbot, and in that corner, the Houston Rockets. I don't even really know what that means.
I don't know. I'm just trying to imagine what defense the Rockets would run.
I think it'd be a zone.
Yeah.
All right, so first we got to think about like which era of Houston Rockets. Like Hakeem, the Dream, James Harden, there's Yao Ming, you know? Defense has always been like a Houston Rockets like problem as of late, and they can't seem to activate in the playoffs. Like James Harden tends to not be James Harden in the playoffs.
That's true.
I see like the Lookbot is like the Spurs.
Hmm.
They have like a very fundamental game plan, a very like concrete scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And the pattern is there, but they're very effective.
Yeah, that's true. The Spurs, just so you know, Franny, they play basketball like the rules are fresh.
Oh, right? So
very much feels like you're watching like a classic film of like people throwing a ball into crates.
Yeah.
Like they play fundamental basketball.
And Lookbot is like a fundamental form of like the Vietnamese literature.
Got you.
And it has a huge legacy that goes further back than the Houston Rockets legacy. Mm-hmm.
Sure, sure.
And the Rockets can't beat the Spurs.
But I'm from Houston. I love Houston so much that I'm going to go with the Houston Rockets.
Wow.
Because the Houston Rockets themselves have like the momentum of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the city versus like, I'm pretty biased. I'm like super biased. But I'm going to say Houston Rockets beats the Lookbot.
All right.
All right.
You heard it here first, folks.
Cool. Yeah. Josh Wien writing losing ass poems. I'm sorry, I'm totally kidding.
Picking location over culture.
Location is culture.
True.
Picking personal history over family history.
Wow.
No, my dad loves Houston Rockets more than I do.
Okay, cool. We've safely landed back. Where can our folks find you if they want to find out more?
JoshuaWinPoetry.com.
Mm-hmm.
My Twitter and my Instagram is namesjoshua0304. And hopefully in a book near you soon.
Yeah.
In a book near you soon.
Hopefully in somebody's book.
Yeah.
You want to take us out with a poem, please?
Yeah. So this is from the manuscripts. It's seven
editors. Listen.
Yes. Lean in, editors.
It's seven sonnets. So a big part of this manuscript is I wanted to focus on like the Asia town of Bel Air Boulevard because not a lot of like spotlight was on them during the hurricane. And I like my favorite massage place in the Asia town. I informed an interview with the people there. So this is like based off that. It's like a dialogue between speaker and the masseuse. And you'll know when the perspective changes, because it changes per sonnet.
Okay.
Oasis Massage Salon. Relax, relax. You can relax now. Stare at the roof. Here, have this blanket. It smells familiar, doesn't it? Waft the sage and thick wood incense. Your $25 was well spent. All this tension all over your body. What do you do for a living? How often are you on your feet? Stress kills the body. You're damaged. Your pelvis needs placement. Do you do a lot of heavy lifting? What does your back bend over for? What are you collecting? What are you gathering? Relax, M. Relax. Be alone with your thoughts with me. I'll take your worries away, or I'll try at least until the hour is up. In the meantime, close your eyes, unclench your fists. The weather outside can't get you if you're under my shoulders. Space your legs a little to make room for my knees. They understand nooks too well. Make room for my knees, they understand nooks too well. I apologize if I come off shrugging. I drive through countless midnight red lights, listening to post-game coverage. The rain percentage doesn't equal probability. It actually means the radius of ground the rain will put over our heads. That's why it will rain in some parts and not others. I've been driving all across downtown to gather my friends with the windows down. I seem to be the only one getting wet. Pockets in the sky stare at me. They must be filled with pressed shoulders. I must warn you, mine have been chipped to sensitivity. I trade money to receive this pain I deserve. Give me all your pressure. Houston is an hour away from Houston. Bel Air Boulevard never closes down. A little water never scared away business. We closed down when enough water scared me. Business picked up right after the last family left George R. Brown Convention Center. My hands still flow softly forward and out. I was taught to spread the tension out until the hills flattened into deserts. Don't worry, you won't be too dry or dehydrated. I've mixed this lotion with enough aloe for the potholes outside. Imagine that. Think of the potholes filled with purpose during the worst of it. Tragedy is relief to somebody somewhere after a rainbow storm. A diverse city underwater makes for a spectacle of a fish tank. I just wanted to work again, to go back to sticky normalcy. So do this for me, please. For a moment, forget your troubles so I know I still got it. Inhale, your breath will always find you. I still got it there. Inhale, your breath will always find you at the lowest depths. Follow the bubbles towards the sky. I wanted to bring my father, but I always chicken out. Back has been hurting since cleaning up the garage. They say trauma is inherited, and I think lower back pain too. Coincidence is found an ocean away. My brother holds his back after posting up the sign for his new bar. He stays up till 3 a.m. to tell me stories of Contino Mobley while organizing a benefit at his bar that raises $2,000 for my parents in secret. Because even in disaster, pride has a high buoyancy. The boat ride over made some sick and some went overboard and some had sponsors and got in easier. And that's all they hoped they'd ever ask. A luxury to pay for protection, for safekeeping, a shelter under fire. For protection and self-keeping, a shelter under fire holds history in its embers. You can enter the steam room after I'm done with you. It's an additional $25. Allow the smoke off of the stones to expand your pores. Take in the fire ants one by one. Let them carry your burdens, which weigh 1,000 times heavier than knots in between the knuckles of your spine. Strain up your back by placing your ankles flat against charcoal-stained wood. Allow a bulldozer to push a flat piece of concrete toward you. On it, your favorite mural of the city. Embrace with your nostrils. Relax. Allow the drippings of the oils to gather at the base of your feet. By the time you watch yourself drain through the metal grate at the center of the room, you will be the condensation on the door. The room. Condensation on the door. Black mold unworthy of a proper burial. You should have seen the lawn. You would have thought the whole street had junk to sell. The house is much more quiet. I blame the echo of pale tiles installed by the kindness of an uncle. Gray spots where lines intersect disappear when you try to focus. At dinners, I stare at the floor looking to find small talk to empty the clock on the wall of its parallel reflection. After the wedding, my sister will move out and the upstairs will be more haunting than below. A bird who flies home to an empty nest never relaxes its wings. Twigs, bit by bit, will be thrown by the beak of an angry cardinal to her sons as a form of retaliation and as a housewarming gift. Rusted parts of an old house live inside a brand new house. Parts of an old house inside a brand new house become a memorial. Portraits of my late husband in black and white glow red above the incense. He worked as a cook down the street. He would visit me during my breaks and massage my hands. After he passed, my children left shortly after. New jobs, new families, you know the cycle. The storm came and I was alone in my house and it wasn't safe to go to work. I lay on my bed until my legs began to float. All I could think about was a tree falling down over the roof or debris from a nearby house striking a hole through the chimney. I had roof insurance, but not flood insurance. Please, break, please. I remember the rain began dripping on my forehead. The eye of the roof stared down at me and spoke. Now, you can relax. Really, relax now.
I'm so glad that we got a chance to talk to Joshua.
Yeah, so great. Also, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but Josh and I were at Kundiman together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so it was like just so good to get to kick it with him here.
Oh,
in this
you
space.
Little Kundiman family.
I know.
I was so moved by not only his discussion of the Lukbot, which is just such a cool form, too.
Very cool.
You know, the fact that his father had been like reading poetry in his face
that
entire
wild?
Time.
Yeah.
So wild. So wild. Have you ever found out that somebody in your family is like a secret poet?
You know, okay, so I don't know if I have talked about this on Versus before, so mm-hmm. you know, skip ahead if you're bored, mm-hmm. but I knew that my dad had written in college, mm-hmm. like when he was younger, mostly because he was like, poetry, yeah, I used to write, lol. But recently I found out that when we were kids, mm-hmm. he was like trying to write a novel, and he like got like, he says like halfway through.
Whoa.
Like writing like a sci-fi novel that sounded like brilliant. It sounded really great, and then he never finished, but he was like part of this like online community of like writers who mm-hmm. were like sharing their work and stuff.
Wow.
So he was like more serious, I guess, than I realized.
That's
like
so
with the writing
though.
Thing. Yeah,
I feel like you're gonna finish that book. I see that in your destiny.
Whew, perhaps, mm-hmm. mayhaps. What about you?
I feel like I've maybe talked about this too, but you know, my mom is a writer,
right?
She has a novel that she works on every now
I didn't
and again
know
but my
that.
Father is like a published poet, which I didn't find out until I was sort of like what I was already like calling myself a poet,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you know, all that other kind of stuff. Yeah. And then my dad put me into this room and just gave me all his journals and like that he's been published in or like his notes. And
yeah.
that I think that was the moment where I realized our DNA carried more than like cancer and faces, you know?
Truly. Cancer, faces, artistic tendencies.
Yeah, you know, because like in the mythology of my family, right? Like I am the one that has had the least contact with my father out of all my siblings, but mm-hmm. I am the most like him in terms of hobby, in terms of presence,
wild.
In terms of politics, everything, you know?
Do you think that if you had grown up with the knowledge that writing was so strongly in your lineage, that would have...
I'd be an accountant.
Really? You think so?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I probably would have hated it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, that's what my dad does.
So yeah, I don't know.
Do
yeah,
different.
Yeah, probably. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's you're also like, I would have to reimagine so much in my childhood. But yeah, I don't think I would have been as attracted to writing if it didn't feel like a private space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I kind of agree. You mm-hmm. know, I was like a way to like mark a space that was different from my father's mm-hmm. or from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think in some ways that's like a tiny sacrifice of mm-hmm. like keeping the thing to yourself so that like your kid can have like their own little space.
Yeah. And I will say now, like now that I am a writer, I am glad to have that within my lineage because
totally.
Now it is this thing that me and my father can like gather around and have this connection with.
Yeah. How beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Man.
All right. Well, maybe we should...
Let's thank some folks and then go call our parents. And
Oh my gosh. I really do need to call my mom. Oh man. All right.
I would like to thank today... The Sonnet for making me feel like a formalist when I'm actually just lazy. Thank you, Sonnets.
I want to, in that similar vein, thank Patricia Smith for like beasting the Sonnet, mm-hmm. generally speaking, and like
all forms,
truly all forms, mm-hmm. and just like all new formalists who are showing us that these forms have like a lot of life in them.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We should also thank some other folks.
Yeah.
We want to thank Post Loudness and the Poetry Foundation, especially Idami Noriega, amazing, amazing human being as always, our producer, Daniel Kisslinger, and you, our listeners, for continuing to listen and subscribe and rate and review us, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. If you listen to us on any place where you are allowed to comment, please, 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 please leave a comment, rate us, let us know what you think. Please continue to share the show with all your friends on Apple Podcasts, on SoundCloud, on the Poetry Foundation website, wherever you are listening to it. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at VS the Podcast. And with that being said, that's all we got to say to y'all today. We'll see y'all next time.
All right. Gotta go call my mama.
Yeah, my daddy. Bye.